Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
You'll have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts. It's
Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
All right, baseball isn't boring in large part because smart people. Ben Sherrington is a smart guy. He's also one of my favorite GMs. I'm biased, though, because we've been around a long time. By the way, Ben, 20th anniversary of when I put you in a book for the first time ever, right?
Wow, that's quite a marker on the calendar.
We go back, and I remember we did Chasing Steinbrenner. Well, we didn't do it. You did not co-author Chasing Steinbrenner with me, but you did help out quite a bit. You were a passage in it. It was back in 2003. What a time that was. Like, I remember, and I was fortunate enough to be up there for a trade, which I'm sure Theo was thrilled about, just the one day I was up there, the big crustacean creation, which is the Scott Sauerbeck trade. And I remember, Ben, being struck by, first of all, you know, you had Jed Hoyer and Josh Burns in the same room, like in almost like in a room that almost like desk couldn't, they had to like butt up against each other.
That's right.
And then you come in, and I think it was Anastasio Martinez. Man, I have a good memory. And it's like, you come in, and Theo's sitting there, and you said to him, because you were the farm director, and you say, sorry, you know, Theo said to you, he's like, oh, sorry, we got to include Anastasio Martinez. And you'd be like, well, you know, that's how the deal works or whatever. And it's that whole scene, and it was chaotic and everything. You've been through a million of them, but I have not. But it's sort of like it checked off all the boxes of how a front office works together when a trade is going down. I mean, I don't expect you to remember that moment, but still.
I do. You're bringing me back. I do remember it. I specifically remember talking to Theo about Anastasio Martinez, who was probably someone at the time as farm director that I was clinging on to too tightly.
That's why he apologized to you? Seriously?
Well, no, but to Theo's credit, he was so good at that. Like he understood the attachment that different people would have to a player, whether you were a scout or in player development or anybody who might have some attachment to a player. He was very good at understanding if whenever we made a trade, even if the trade really made sense, that it was going to be difficult for some people in the organization. And he was always great. He had a very nice touch about him in handling those situations, making sure people knew that he was thinking about them and seeing these players leave. And of course, that was a relatively small trade you described, but like think about some of the massive ones that he pulled off. And it was a remarkable time to be with the Red Sox through those years, working with Theo and just an incredible collection of folks.
Well, another thing I remember, Ben, is like in that dynamic, and you say how Theo's sort of going to checking off all the boxes. It's not just like, okay, we need a guy, we're going to get this guy. It was also Brendan Lyon was in the deal. And I remember him saying, it's like, yeah, the guys in the clubhouse, this is going to like, they're not going to like this because he was a popular guy. I mean, that this is like, all of this is factored in. He's going to you about Anastasio Martinez. He understands the effect it has on the clubhouse. I think I'm trying to talk to Jed Hoyer and he's like politely saying, I actually have to some faxes to get off or whatever it was. That's how long ago it was. But yeah, so there's a lot that I would have been, yeah. And you've been,
you're opening a window into, why he's been so successful. Theo had this, he's not the only one, but he's one of the few folks who have done that job so well that can kind of combine like just this incredibly clear, objective, hard, analytical thinker with like a clear, precise idea on value and be sort of ruthless in pursuing it with this incredible humanity and being able to understand things like that, the impact in the clubhouse and how to manage that also. So the great ones can do both of those things.
Were you ever the one, I mean, when you obviously as a GM probably have had to go down and deal with that sort of clubhouse dynamic before, right? I mean, what was one that you remembered it saying sort of, and obviously around Boston this time, or even in the trade deadline, it was the Bogue dealing with Vasquez gets traded. So you have to deal with Bogarts being upset. I mean, do you have an instance of where you had to sort of put out that fire?
Well, it was quite a roller coaster during the time I was in that job in Boston. And, I had sort of extreme ends of it, right? So the Dodgers trade in August of 2012, which was unique because of the mechanics of it. That wasn't one where we could sort of get ahead of the communication because we were literally waiting on waiver results for, to find out if the deal went through. So very, 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 very small circle of people knew about it. Really, that we couldn't afford until the waivers got through. So once the waivers went through, it was, very trying to get to communication really fast. So that was a unique, and I think at that point, obviously things weren't going well. And I think there was a sort of general understanding in the clubhouse that something was going to need to change, but people didn't anticipate something quite like that quickly. So that in that case, it was more about like the week after that, like the follow-up conversations with Pedroia and Lester and those guys explaining like what this means and what it didn't mean. We sort of had to deal with it in the aftermath. And then the next year, obviously, we're in it and we're able to add PV close to the deadline. And that was the other end of the spectrum where, there's a group who really believed in themselves and, we were in it, we were playing well. And, but saw that, I think, as like one more signal from the front office or ownership or wherever that, okay, now we're all in it. Now all hands and feet are in on this and there's only one thing to do. And that's literally what the guys were saying in the clubhouse after that trade. And then of course the following year we fall short again and made some really difficult trades involving people that we all cared about so much. And that was hard again in the other way. So yeah, I experienced the full range.
There's so much, obviously there's so many parts of your job that you have to deal with and the people aspect of it, of doing all those, the different levels of it and different approaches of it, but then actually having to talk to the guys. And you bring up, so I do want to get into sort of your approach, and this isn't all going to be Red Sox centric, but since you brought it up, I do later, a little bit later, want to get into your approach about that heading into 2013 season, that off season, because it was sort of unique about where you had this money to spend and the way you chose to spend it. But you reminded me something I had no intention of bringing up, but during the World Series, after a World Series game, the Baseballs and Boring podcast had on both Nick Punto and Josh Beckett live, right? So all you were missing was Carl Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez, but those two were good. And Beckett told this story. Now, you can confirm, you can deny, I don't know. He said that he wasn't going to agree to the trade because he had, I think, 10-5 rights because he didn't want to pay taxes in Los Angeles. And Carl Crawford called to offer to pay for his taxes.
I never heard that before.
Oh.
I've never heard it. It's possible. I do remember those conversations one at a time happening, and Carl was like literally in surgery when it happened. We literally had to wait for him to come out of anesthesia to have the conversation with him about the trade. And I felt horrible about the timing. It's just like, you know, we had no control of that. It was obviously, they wouldn't, you know, couldn't have happened without him in the deal. And so I remember walking through that with him and his agent at the time. I had not heard that about the be true.
Well, see, there you go. You learn something new every day. And also, I want to, before I forget, you talk about working with Theo. Obviously, you went to Toronto. You worked with the people up there. We had on Alex Anthopoulos, and this is maybe the most important part of this entire conversation. Anthopoulos almost came through the screen when I said that ketchup-flavored potato chips were disgusting. So now, as a New Englander, but someone who has worked extensively up in Toronto, you are the deciding vote, yay or nay on ketchup flavored potato chips.
Oh boy, there's so many things I love about Toronto and Canada, but I don't know that I had a single ketchup flavored. I do remember them floating around the office. So look, I generally have a positive feeling disposition towards all of our Canadian brothers and sisters, wonderful people. So if they feel that strongly about ketchup flavored potato chips, I gotta be on board with
that. That is the ultimate like talk show. The caller calls up and says, "I like you personally. I respect your opinion, but."
Thank you for that.
All right, well, I do want to get into some of the stuff, the here and the now, and I'm going to touch on two sort of newsworthy items. And one of them, the first one, I'm going to ask you about is sort of what we just talked about. Which is managing personalities. Brian Reynolds, evidently, you know, he had, through a source, reportedly had asked to be traded. 3 years left to become a free agent, obviously a great, great player. And I just, from your perspective, how do you handle, like, that is another unique situation, right? I mean, there's so many unique situations, which, like, I keep popping up in my head at your job. So I'm with you. But so have you ever had to deal with something like that before, or was that a unique situation for you?
Yeah, this one's been unique, and I'll try to come back and answer your question, although maybe I'll never quite get to answering your question. But
okay.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T, or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I think that's, this isn't specific to Brian, but just sort of generally, because there's a backdrop there where, you know, it's no secret that, and I've said publicly that, you know, our first choice has been to have Brian here for a long time, and including hopefully through an extension. We've made efforts to do that, and unfortunately, haven't been able to accomplish that to this point. And so there's that background. And then, there's a request, and what is that based on? And so you have two different things, really. You have the contract background and then request and the trade scenario. Both of those things by themselves they're so hard to do justice talking out loud about, because as you know, there's like just so much nuance and so many variables. Whether you're talking about, you know, someone's contract, or you're talking about potential trade, there's so many nuances, so many variables, and it's so personal. And so I've always found that it's really hard to do justice to either one of those topics from my perspective publicly, never mind both at the same time, which is why I've basically just not tried to, because I think I'll not be helping the situation if I do. Which leads me back to the answer. Hopefully the answer is that in this case, as in any case, you know, where my energy would go would be, hey, let's just make sure we're doing everything we can to you know, keep the door of communication open. And so that any player, in this case, Brian, but any player feels like he can express anything they want to express, you know, good things, bad things, frustrating things, anything in between. And that would be our desire, is to keep that door of communication going. And because it doesn't guarantee anything, I've always felt, and I probably do take this from Theo, that if you keep the door of communication open, then you just tend to keep more paths open, because ultimately, like, although the way things get executed and exactly what the outcomes are, sometimes there'll be differences, but we really mostly want the same things. You know, we want players to do really well, which means they're going to earn a lot of money over time. We want the team to do really well. Players want the team to do really well. They want to earn what they earn and what's fair, and they have a short window to do that. So it all makes sense in that standpoint. But in individual cases, sometimes there can be frustrations, emotion, disagreements sometimes. And I would just try to keep the door of communication as open as we possibly can in those situations and not talk about it publicly, because it's just hard to. It's hard to do that well enough with all the nuance involved to help totally understand why you or others or, you know, the public sphere would want to talk about it publicly. As a fan, if I'm a fan of a team, another sport, let's say, well, of course I'm every time I see an article about, like, you know, who's in the trade rumors, who's going, who's coming, of course I'm going to click and reread it. So I totally get it. It's part of the business we're in. It's part of the fun of the business. So I guess we all have different roles in that.
I thought for a second you were going to loop back to ketchup flavored potato chips, honestly. Like, I thought, here he comes. But you mentioned extensions. So obviously you said you tried, and this is always a really interesting topic. Again, I talked about with Alex Anthopoulos, who's had a really good run of them. You've done extensions. You've seen, even when you were in the Red Sox front office before, there was the one that I always reference, and Theo was really good at this, right? Like, he was hitting the sweet spot on a lot of guys. And so you must have had the one that always, and Beckett was on with us, a second Josh Beckett reference, I apologize. But he said, I'm not really paraphrasing, he actually said, he's like, they were geniuses. They were geniuses back in 2006, where I had a 5 ERA in July, and all of that, and Terry Francona walks out to me in BP and said, would you like an extension? And it's like, of course I would like an extension. First of all, do you remember that? I mean, you guys.
I don't remember the timing of Tito's conversation, although I totally believe that happened. I do remember the timing of the extension, and I remember the conversations that were going on in the background, and I remember distinctly, actually, you know, to the staff's credit, Tito and the coaching staff's credit, they deserve a lot of credit for a lot of things. But I remember during that time hearing back consistently that, you know, whatever the numbers, Josh's numbers were that year, that he was really gaining trust and respect inside that clubhouse. I know, you know, Tito spoke very favorably, you know, of the competitor and the adjustments he saw him making, still felt like, every time this guy hits the mound, we got a chance to win. So there are things sort of underneath the hood for the staff, certainly, that we were getting back that gave us a good feeling. And then in baseball ops, it wasn't so much me at that time, but certainly Theo and other folks were digging into some of the metrics and believed. And he was at a good age, and the velocity was there. We saw the arc going in a positive way. And then, of course, it wasn't that long after that, you know, in October 2007, it wouldn't have happened, you know, unless he was on that team, as we all know.
Ben, you know, I did the math. You guys, he finished second to Cy Young the following year. You guys saved yourself like $70 million. So, and I'm not asking you to confirm that, but
I certainly cost the Red Sox someone on some others, but
I think you're the plus. I think your plus minus is good. But to go back to sort of the here and the now, do you find it differently? Like, to me, there was this cycle maybe before the last CBA, or where players maybe were a little more hesitant. Now you see these really young players jumping at it, and it seems to be more aggressive to it. Right, the here and the now, what's your perspective of how you think? And I know that the easy answer is a case-by-case basis, but overall, like, you've gone through different waves of this. Where is it right now in terms of accepting extensions?
I think it has changed a bit. I mean, there's a lot of sophisticated folks in every role in the game, right? Players included, that are in tune with the analysis and projecting, you know, what a player's performance and related to that earnings could be if things go in a certain direction and health stays there and all that. So there's a you know, there's it doesn't happen anymore, really, that, you know, there's going to be any party to that conversation that doesn't have a pretty good handle on the value and the risk associated. And it just comes down to that. It's a matter of managing the sort of upside and the risk. And from a player's perspective, timing and, you know, sort of like what is the player valuing at different points in their career? I think it's probably instructive that recently it seems like the certainly strong majority of those types of deals are coming earlier in a player's career. And, you know, maybe that's a way a player and team kind of share risk and still, you know, in a lot of those cases probably still leaves open the possibility of another contract down the road if things work out. But if it doesn't work out, then the player's got, you know, what he needs for a lifetime and, you know, in some cases, you know, generations of lifetimes. So it's ultimately what hasn't changed is that it's a very personal thing. It's not, you know, it's not my contract. It's not the Pirates contract. It's not the Red Sox contract. It's an individual player's contract. And ultimately, you know, I've always felt like our job is to, when we can, basically provide a choice and make that choice as compelling as we can. But it is a choice, and the player deserves the right, you know, to make that choice. And certainly, when players have performed well and been reliable at earlier in their careers, they think they have earned the right to make that choice, and hopefully they get that choice. And in our case with the Pirates, we hope over time that we'll be able to find some common ground with guys over time. We got there with Ke'Bryan Hayes last spring. Certainly want to find ways to do more of those as we go forward.
All right, two more Pirates questions. The first one being the most important. We like to here at the podcast like to make dreams come true. Are you putting Rich Hill next to Mike Burrows in spring training in the locker room?
This is my first day in my little office at Leacom. Mm.
Bradenton. Oh, you're in Bradenton. Oh, all right.
And when I leave this podcast, I will take a right hand turn, walk into the locker room area, and find out exactly where they are. Although we're actually lockering over at Pirate City for the first 10 days, so I don't know where they are over there. But when it gets to Leacom, I'll see if I can put a word in and get those two together. I did enjoy listening to the podcast when you had them both on.
It was fun, man. I mean, I'm not just saying that because it was like, cool. It was like real time mentoring. It was good.
That was really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, now I'm going to ask you about the WBC, which is like probably not so cool. So just take me through, if you can, about the G-Man Choi conversation, the decision, how I know that he was disappointed. But and obviously you have to protect your team. So just take me through that, what that was all about.
Yeah. So a couple important pieces of context probably. One is that G-Man had an elbow procedure earlier this offseason. And that was something that was planned after his season ended in Tampa. We were aware of it at the time of the deal, kind of went through that. We knew roughly what the recovery was going to look like coming into 2023. And he's on pace with the recovery, but it hasn't been a sort of totally normal offseason. So it's not uncommon, I don't think, when players have something like that inside an offseason that a team would have some concern about participation in WBC. And then maybe the other piece of context is that I think sometimes it's, one can be disappointed and also understand, and those are two different things. Both can be true at the same time. I believe that G-Man understands why he's not participating in WBC, but he could still be disappointed. And he's a proud South Korean, and that's a team that obviously he's got a personal emotional attachment to, and they're going to be playing a tournament that people care about. And I totally get it. I think, overall, we want to put him in the best possible position to have a successful season. He's heading into, as of now anyway, he's heading into free agency after the year. I know that's important to him to have a successful season. I'm confident that, we're in a good spot with G-Man. He understands, even if he's disappointed. broadly speaking, we're very supportive of WBC. We've been very supportive of our players and staff participating. We got a lot of players and staff participating. And generally, I think that that's the way it ought to be. You know, it is an event that we can only make as big a deal as it ought to be if most of the time, if possible, the players are participating. I know that's important for the league. I know the Players Association cares about that. It's probably, to be honest, going from farm director to my chair now, and maybe through, you know, with benefit of some wisdom and gray hair, I probably see it differently now than I would have 10 years ago too. Like, this is in some ways bigger than any one team. If it's good for baseball, it means it's good for all of us, and we want the tournament to be as successful as possible.
Yeah, when Daisuke came back throwing 80, you guys probably were not looking at that as so you guys are good. You and G-Man, your guys are good. You and G-Man Choi and everybody's good.
I believe so. I have not seen him yet in Bradenton, but I look forward to doing so.
All right. Okay. All right. And like you said, the WBC is interesting because I think that, and this is a whole other conversation, but the perception of it has changed. I was railing. I remember that 2009 one. Forget about Daisuke. I remember because they were asking guys to go play on artificial turf 9 innings in early March. And I remember Pedroia got banged up. I think it was an oblique. Euclid got banged up. You know, the track record of pitchers were terrible coming out of WBC. But I think the last one maybe took it a step in the right direction of how to – I think Adam Jones said this, is that they learned how to prepare better for it. Like, it wasn't just, okay, show up, you know, so.
I think you're absolutely right. Both the, you know, the folks that are organizing the event itself and the league office, the staffs that make up the coaching staffs of each team, and certainly the communication between the organization and the teams and the players themselves – way ahead of in terms of preparation and just the schedule itself once you get into it, and you know, thoughtful considerations around, you know, volume, work volume and recovery and all that. We're way ahead of where it started. It ought to be something that's, you know, just as safe to participate in for a healthy normal player, just as safe to participate in as a spring training game in Grapefruit League would be. And as long as we can sort of keep it on that playing field, then it ought to be an event we can all support.
Well, last thing, you've been very generous for the time, as always, is going back to the 2013 team and building that team. I think this is a conversation that is important because there's different ways to build a team, and that was a perfect example. When you get the money off of the Dodgers trade, and I remember it wasn't really unlike, you know, a lot of the teams now. You free up money, you go after, oh, they're going to go after the big guy. I think that year maybe it was Josh Hamilton. I don't know. But what you ended up doing was you got key pieces. You got David Ross and Victorino and Napoli and all these guys. When you go into that offseason, did you say, this is how we're going to build it? Now, I would say this. It's probably important to have the foundation guys like the Ortiz and the Pedroias and those guys. But did you go into that saying, listen, we don't run isolation for outfielders. I love that term. I copyrighted it. We need a lot of help in a lot of different ways, including in the clubhouse. So this is how we're going to spread out the money. And was there anything to learn in the years since then from doing it the way you did it on that way, the World Series?
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
I don't know the last part of your question, but I think everything else you said resonates, and particularly the part about the core that still existed. That was the most important thing in the whole offseason planning, was that you know, after the trade happened with the Dodgers, we believed going into that offseason that we had the core, and that core was still at a point in their careers where, you know, we could win with that core. You mentioned some of the names, Pedroia, Lester, Euculus, Ortiz, Ellsbury was still on, you know, there was a really talented group of core guys on that team that gave us a chance to win, we believe. So it wasn't, we didn't think that we needed to restructure the core, so to speak. We needed to build a team around that core. So that was the first thing. And then as we got into the planning, I do remember the other thing that sort of like, there were two things that kind of like kept rolling around in our heads. And I remember a lot of days sitting inside a conference room with that group of people, and ownership was in and out, and Bill James was in and out. We had a lot of input. But the two things that kept resonating, like, you know, build the deepest roster we possibly can with the resources we have. And we need to get the energy back on the field. We had gone from, you know, the September 2011 thing that happened through 2012, and it's not any one person's, you know, issue or fault or responsibility, but for a variety of reasons, we went through a period of time when there just wasn't enough energy on the field on playing games. We needed to get the energy back on our collective energy back on the field playing games where it belonged, back on the game. And so that was ringing around our head, deepest roster possible and a collection of players that would help us put the energy back on the field where it belonged. The more energy on that, the less energy on other stuff, the better chance we have to prepare and execute and win, we believed. And so it kind of came together like that. And it was noticeable even like way before some of the events of the regular season happened. I still remember even in spring training, like things that happened that you looked at and heard, well, that sounds different than, you know, what we're used to in a typical spring training. Like there was a heightened sense of just a heightened focus on what was happening on the field. And I do think that was intentional, but, you know, totally full credit to the players and the coaching staff and John for making that actually live out for 162 games.
Do you think that teams across the board are valuing clubhouse presences like they did back then? My take on this is real quick, Ben. I think it's coming back a little bit. I think it's a little bit cyclical. I think people fell in love with the idea of projections, and maybe devaluing the clubhouse. In other words, you know, you're not going to have, I don't know, I'm not going to name names, but it's just, you're not going to have like the veteran guy. Instead, you're going to have the guy with the 5 ERA who you think can change something and be good. Now I feel like there's more, like you guys, and I'm not saying this is why you got Rich Hill, but we mentioned Rich Hill is a valued guy in that clubhouse. McCutchen, valued guy. Do you think it's coming back a little bit that way, or am I off base in anything I said?
No, I think, you know, you're not off base at all. And I'll get to a longer answer, but it reminded me of something that Mark Shapiro, it's a story he's told. He shared with me when Mark was in his first year as GM with Cleveland. He ran into Pat Gillick somewhere at a game, and obviously Pat was a Hall of Famer, and so Mark was going to took advantage of that opportunity to ask him, "Hey, like, what's your secret? Like, what, you know, when you think about players or teams, like, what are your anchors?" And Pat said, "Well, you just want players you can trust," and that trust word does sort of sum up a lot, right? Now, in order to trust player, part of trusting a player is the performance. It is the production on the field, and it's what you can project the production to be. So that's where the models and predictions are so important and so valuable, because we still need to start there. What is the performance going to be on the field, and how do we sort of predict that as best we can? That's part of trust, but certainly there's another element of trust, and that is, you know, what is the player going to do sort of from the time he wakes up to the time he goes to sleep to help himself, help our team, you know, do whatever he can to be the producer on the field that we know he can be, but also be, you know, an additive in the clubhouse and whatever else that comes with that. So I think it's absolutely something that teams are thinking about a lot. The trouble is the trouble is being precise in predicting, you know, that side, you know, that we all, both of us, you know, and probably even the two of us included, we're not the same person at every point in our life. Well, it's the same with baseball players. They're not going to be the same exact. In most cases, there's probably some exceptions. But in a lot of cases, just like all of us humans, they're not going to be the exact same human in every single season, because like all of us humans, there's other stuff going on. You know, there's things in our life that are pulling at us, or there's something personal that's pulling at us, or, you know, we're frustrated with our performance or the role we have or whatever it is, that has an impact on our behavior, on our energy, you know, like it would on any of us. So that's why it's so hard to predict, when you're around, when you're around, David Ross or Shane Victorino or Ryan Dempster in the clubhouse that year, you could see it, you know, right? Like you could feel the impact that they were having, not just on the field, but with the room. And so if you knew that, you know, when you're up close and when you're up close to it, you can see it, feel it, and there's no question there's value to it. It's harder to predict it in advance, because us humans are complicated. but I think every team is certainly trying to get closer to getting that right. And absolutely, it's a factor in decision making, and it ought to be.
Well, that's a really good answer, by the way. Excellent job. You're off and running in your spring training. You're A game first day in Bradenton. So I appreciate it, Ben. I appreciate it, man. It's good to talk to you. And I think we solved a lot of the world's problems today. So
I enjoyed it. Send me a t-shirt.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.